I know some church fellowships have the message first and then the worship. I am so glad that the worship comes first. I mean, it's all worship, but as I sit there, it's often what I need as I'm kind of processing through when I have the chance to speak, which I do today. I am not the normal person who speaks, but anybody who's new, Doug is our head pastor, and he asked me to speak this week, which I consider a real honor and a privilege. So it's great to be here and to be able to share from the Word with you. My wife and I and family were in Green Bay, Wisconsin before we came here. And one of the things that we enjoyed about Green Bay was the kind of open expanses. I did miss the mountains, but it has a beauty of its own. And if you've ever been to Wisconsin or other places similar, there's a lot of farms and farmhouses, old barns. And one of the things that I love to hear about and see pictures of were farms that have been renovated, you know, big barns that have been renovated into houses. And maybe you've seen something like that where they've taken an old kind of abandoned barn with all the old barn wood and kind of used the structure, supported it, taken that wood and made just beautiful homes out of it. And I love that. It's sweet to see how someone can take something that's been abandoned and then make something beautiful, a great use. Matt Murdock, who used to work at Timberline, where I work and serve the Lord, and now he teaches at the school here. He is a master craftsman at taking, one thing I saw of many, I should say, he would take old wood, whether it's fence posts or kind of wood from the sides of some of these old buildings around the area, you know, that's been grayed from the weather, and make just some incredible frames out of them. And he had a few of those up in his apartment. I loved looking at just the how cool this is. It's been sitting for years, being rained on, the sun, you know, wearing it down, and now it's this beautiful piece that's being used to surround a picture or whatever it might be. I love that kind of thing. You know, something that's been abandoned, taken, and made use of. My wife enjoys it as well, and because she enjoys it, I get to enjoy what she does with that area of life. She gets a magazine, used to, I think it's called Do It Yourself or something, and though with kids, there's very little time to do it herself, but she does find some time, and this magazine has a lot of different ways that you can take kind of things that maybe our everyday, maybe things that you don't use anymore, something you find at a thrift store, at a garage sale, and kind of take it together and make something really cool out of it. And one of the things we have in our bedroom that my wife made was a bookshelf. And she took some time. She went thrift store shopping, found a number of crates and drawers, even a suitcase, and then created cubicle kind of box shelves that fit these crates. And then she kind of put this whole thing together out of plywood and stained it. And these crates would actually sit in certain spaces. And so you'd have books and then a crate you can pull out. And it just turned into just a really sweet piece. Again, something that had been abandoned, all these boxes, crates, suitcase, now being used. I did bring, just for the visual, something else that she made. It's very feminine. She took an old frame or a frame that we had sitting around and wrapped it with cloth, put some ribbon on there. Ribbon on the back, again, very feminine. And then put some old kind of like knobs and stuff, you know, from bookshelves or from drawers. And she uses that to hang her jewelry on in our bathroom. Yeah, it's pretty sweet. I mean, I don't hang much on there, but I love this kind of thing. You know, taking something used, something old, something abandoned, and kind of reshaping it, reforming it into something that can be used again, used for something new. I like that, one, because it's cheap. Rather than buying something new. But I also like it because in many ways it parallels what the Lord does, doesn't it? I mean, he takes things that are abandoned and he makes something new. He uses things that are abandoned. In fact, I would like to argue that God doesn't use much unless it's been abandoned, unless it's been surrendered. And we're going to look at that today. You see, God doesn't come in, it doesn't seem like, at least not very often, as a bully and said, okay, I'm going to use you, regardless of whether you want me to use you or not. He tends to wait until we have surrendered ourselves. And he says, great, that's what I was looking for. The passage we're going to look at is in the book of Luke. We've been studying through the book as a church, processing through just the different things in the Gospels as we see Jesus' life and the life of the disciples and those who hear Jesus. We'll get to the exact passage in a minute, but I just want to paint the setting a little bit of what's gone on. Jesus has been traveling around. He's been preaching. He's starting to be respected as a great rabbi. In fact, many people have heard him teach and say, this guy's different. I mean, this rabbi speaks with authority. There's something different about his words, the authority of his words, that's different from everyone else we hear teaching. Not only that, but he's doing things that are different. Some spectacular things. We've already looked at an example where he was in a synagogue and a man with a demon-possessed man, was in there, and Jesus cast the demon out of this guy. People were amazed. Not only that, but just before the story we're going to look at, Jesus had gone to Simon Peter's house, and Simon Peter's mom was ill. She had a fever. And Jesus healed her of that fever, and then the woman was so healed, his mother-in-law, that she actually went and made dinner for him. And then after that, as the sun set and the Sabbath was over, people started coming to Simon Peter's house to be healed of their problems. Lameness, blindness, demon possession. And one after another, Jesus is casting out demons, healing the lame, taking care of people's problems physically. It was exciting times. I mean, I can just imagine Peter sitting there watching in amazement as he sees this Jesus. Well, it hasn't been all good. A couple weeks ago, we looked at that some of the people, especially the religious leaders, were looking and seeing what Jesus was doing and hearing the words he was saying, and they were getting intimidated. They were starting to think, this doesn't seem to fit in with our plan, with the system that we're living in. And the things he's saying some pretty powerful words. And so they're kind of all getting uptight. In fact, they get to the point of being ready to stone him, if you remember. And miraculously, Jesus slips through their midst. Gets away. It wasn't his time yet. Well, the story we're going to look at doesn't take place in a synagogue and it doesn't take place in Peter's house. It takes place on the shores of the Sea of Galilee. The Sea of Galilee, Lake of Gennesaret. And on these shores, Jesus is there and he's standing and people have started to come from the surrounding towns. I can imagine them being similar in size maybe to a Fraser, a Winter Park. And as word travels quickly in a small town like ours, word was traveling quickly in this area. And people were coming and flocking to see Jesus. They wanted to hear his words. They maybe wanted to see a miracle. Maybe they wanted to be healed themselves. And as Jesus stands there, the crowd starts pressing in. I'm sure there were those in the back who wanted to hear and couldn't hear well, wanted to see and couldn't see well. So they start pushing forward and the crowd is pushing in. And Jesus has to figure out what to do. Well, not only was Jesus and the crowd there, but there were also some men on the edge of the lake, some fishermen. And they were doing, I'm sure, what they would normally do. It was probably sometime in the morning. And they were cleaning their nets. They'd been out fishing all night. That's what you did. If that was your occupation on the Sea of Galilee, you'd fish all night with these nets and you'd bring in your haul of fish. And then you'd clean out your nets. You'd probably go home, take a nap. Sleep during the day, work at night. It was a pretty lucrative business, fishing in Galilee. Well, these men were on the shore, but there was a small group of these guys, probably about four, who were a little bit more depressed than the others. Because you see, these four, Simon Peter was one of them, had been fishing all night and caught absolutely nothing. Fishing all night, catching nothing, but as responsible fishermen, they knew that they couldn't just go home, they had to take care of their nets. Because they were filled with mud and rocks and gunk, and if they left them as they were, when they came back to fish the next night, they'd be all stuck together and dried out. And so there on the shore, as Jesus is teaching, the crowd is pressing in, and they're cleaning their nets after catching nothing. Probably just imagining, I can imagine, looking forward to that soft bed to get some sleep. Well, that's where we pick up our story. In Luke chapter 5. If you haven't opened up to it, you can open up there, Luke chapter 5. We're going to spend time in the first 11 verses of this chapter. Luke chapter 5, verse 1. It says, "Now it happened that while the crowd was pressing around him and listening to the word of God, he was standing by the lake of Gennesaret. And he saw two boats lying at the edge of the lake, but the fishermen had gotten out of them and they were washing their net. Jesus sees as this crowd is pressing in, he wants to preach the gospel, he wants to preach the kingdom of heaven. This crowd's pressing in, he sees two boats, abandoned boats, empty boats, because the fishermen are out cleaning their nets. Simon Peter is one of those. And he sees these boats, and he realizes there's something that can be done with these boats. Verse 3, it says, and he got into one of the boats, which was Simon's, and asked him to push out a little way from the land. Now, again, just to kind of piece that together, and I'm going to read between the lines a little bit here because we can easily read across the passage and I think miss kind of what's really going on or what potentially is going on in Peter's mind. You see, he's been fishing all night, catching nothing. Kind of depressing. And now it's time to clean the nets. And that's his task. That's the task at hand. Clean these nets. Make sure they're clean so I can get home to my wife. You know he had a wife? It was his mother-in-law who was sick earlier. I want to get home to my wife so I can go to sleep. Because I know tomorrow night I'm going to be out fishing again all night. That's what you did. And so that my task at hand is to clean these nets as fast as I can because I want to get out of here. That's my task. And here comes Jesus, this great teacher, the one who Peter had known, gotten to know, miracle worker. And Jesus says to Peter, hey, can I borrow your boat? It's empty, abandoned for now. Can I borrow your boat? And not only that, but will you take me out a little way from the shore so I can preach to these people from the boat? Simon had a choice, didn't he? He has a choice. I mean, he could say, yeah, Jesus, I understand. It's, you know, you need to get out there. There's a few other boats around. Honestly, I am just beat. I need to get home. And I can't go home till I clean these nets. So I understand that you need my boat, but to be totally honest, do you mind if I just kind of keep working on my task right now? I mean, I'm focused. And head home. He could have said that. But he didn't, thankfully. Instead, he abandons his task. He surrenders what he was doing, cleaning the nets, and he says, okay, Lord, let's do it. And so you can read that. Jesus got into one of the boats, which was Simon's, and asked him to put out a little way from the land. And he, Jesus, sat down, and he began teaching the people from the boat. Jesus took the abandoned boat and took Peter's abandoned task and used it to preach to the people in a way that they could all probably see him and they could all hear him, so the message that he wanted to communicate from the Lord could be clearly explained. Well, I can just imagine Peter sitting there listening. And probably in amazement because he's seen some amazing things happen at the hands of Jesus. And he's probably, again, speaking with authority. And again, I'm just reading between the lines. I don't know if this is true, but I would imagine if I was Peter, I'd be pretty excited that Jesus is in my boat. And I might even be thinking a little bit like, wow, look at me. You know, I abandoned my task so Jesus could use my boat. And he's preaching from my boat. And as Peter is sitting there listening, the message comes to an end. I don't know how long it was. An hour, maybe less, maybe more. But Jesus finishes teaching, and I imagine Peter thinking, okay, now I'm back to my task, back to cleaning the nets so that I can go home, take my rest, and get ready to come back out the next night. But Jesus has something else in mind, a little something for Peter. Jesus says to Simon, verse 4, when he had finished speaking, he said to Simon, put out into the deep water and let down your nets. Put out into the deep water, Simon. And let down your nets. Now again, Simon, I'm sure, deeply respected Jesus. He's heard him speak. He's just heard him speak at this instant in the boat. He's seen Jesus do miracles. He's seen him heal. He probably recognizes Jesus as a carpenter, a good carpenter. But Jesus isn't a fisherman. That's for sure. Because you fish at night on the Sea of Galilee. And not only that, Peter and his men, they've been fishing all night and caught nothing. And now this guy, this preacher, wants me to go out into the deep waters and throw down my net? Again, Peter has a choice. There's an option. He could say, well, you know, Jesus, I recognize you're wanting, you know, me to catch some fish, but I really need to get back to work. I need to head home to my wife, to my rest. And he could take Jesus back to the shore, drop him off, go back to his nets, clean him up, head home, head held high. He could tell his wife, wow, Jesus preached out of my boat because I let him take my abandoned boat. He could do that. He'd be right. But he didn't. He didn't. Even though as a fisherman who'd probably been fishing from a child, he hears this carpenter, Jesus, say, hey, go out to the middle of the sea. Go out to the deep. Throw down your net. And you can hear by Simon's response some of his thinking, Master, we worked hard all night and caught nothing. This doesn't make sense. This doesn't fit with my experience as a fisherman. But, he says, I will do as you say and let down the nets. You see, Peter, having abandoned his task of cleaning the nets, now had this next challenge of abandoning his experience, of abandoning his intellect, his understanding of what's normal, appropriate, as a fisherman. And he says, Lord, it's yours. I'll go. And so he goes out. And what happens? What does Jesus do? Well, he does the same thing he did with the abandoned boats and the same thing he did with the abandoned tasks. He uses them. He uses Peter. And so they go out into the sea, into the deep. In verse 6, it says, when they had done this, they enclosed a great quantity of fish and their nets began to break. So many. So they signaled to their partners on the other boat for them to come and to help them. And they come and they filled boats, both of the boats, with fish so that even the boats began to sink. Wow. God uses abandoned objects, surrendered people. A couple little points to make. Why does Jesus say go out to the deep water? I mean, why the deep water? Deep water is used throughout Scripture. It's actually a pretty significant term, all the way from Genesis, especially in the Psalms. There's a lot of significance in deep water. I don't know exactly why he uses that term here, but there's a pretty practical reason that I could think of. These weren't fish that Jesus had seen swimming in the shallows. It wasn't like as Jesus was preaching his sermon, he noticed, oh, there's a school of fish going that way. Oh, and they're coming back again. It's amazing what you can think about while you're preaching. I mean, your mouth can keep moving and you can have whole conversations with yourself. Jesus didn't do that. He didn't notice that there's these fish going back and forth and think, oh, wow, this would be the great kind of exclamation point at the end of my sermon. The great crescendo. If after I finished, I said, hey, put down your nets, and all of a sudden there was this big catch, and everybody, wow, this guy's great. No, Jesus says, I want you to go to the deep water, a place where there's no human way you could understand or you could know that there would be fish. I think for Peter and his friends, they knew this was miraculous. Jesus brought them to the place. They put down their net, deep water, you can't see the fish, and sure enough, there they are. A huge catch. Another small side point that's easy to look over, but I think is fascinating. What's happening with the nets? What's happening with the boats? They're breaking. The nets are breaking. And the boats? They're sinking. The nets are breaking and the boats are sinking. Part of it's to obviously show how large the catch was, but I kind of started thinking, this is crazy. Jesus is in these sinking boats. The man who can walk on water, buoyancy shouldn't be a problem for him. And yet the boats are sinking. The nets are breaking. I mean, couldn't he have chosen a smaller school of fish to catch? Just one that would be just right? Of course, he wanted to show, it seems, the grandeur of his power. I don't know if this is the point that Luke was making, but I couldn't help but recognize the parallel to the spiritual life. When you offer yourself to God, when you abandon your life to Him, your intellect, your experience, your task, your family, your home, your car, your work, when you give yourself to Him, sometimes the nets begin to break and the boat begins to sink. We can buy into, I think, a lie that says that if you give yourself to the Lord, life is going to be easy. It's going to be great. Not usually. Because just as with this abandoned boat and these abandoned nets, God loves to use us to capacity. To capacity. And sometimes it means the nets begin to break and the boat begins to sink. When I was in Green Bay, we at the church, it was a larger church, and we had a business who donated a bunch of couches and furniture. And these were beautiful couches and beautiful furniture. And it was like this nice, that leathery kind of fabric. And one of our staff members could build these beautiful tables out of concrete and put glass on them. And we made these just really neat coffee bars areas. Little sitting areas where you could sit across from somebody, have a cup of coffee. There was coffee you could kind of pump out. And there's about three or four of these around the church, just these really fancy little areas. They were beautiful. Flowers, all sorts of stuff. They were great. People loved them. Well, we as a church decided to do some work in the downtown. Now, Green Bay is not huge, but it did have kind of more of a downtown inner city part. A lot of people, families from Chicago and from Milwaukee had moved up who maybe had been pushed out of the cities. And so they moved into Green Bay, and we realized there was a need to connect with some of these families, sometimes three or four families living in one little house. And so we'd done some work downtown. We rented a building, and that kind of ran out. And so we invited some of these people we'd connected with to come to the church out in the suburbs. Again, it's not a huge city. But they'd come out, and pretty quickly we realized that a lot of these kids had no idea how to treat nice furniture. I mean, they're jumping on them and running around and, you know, pumping the coffee and down in the sugar packets. And there's mud on the couches and pen marks and scratches. And, you know, pretty soon people start saying, hey, what are you going to do about the furniture? These nice areas are starting to get destroyed by these people who are coming to the church. And so we had a meeting. So you do in a church. You have a problem, you have a meeting. And so we had a meeting. And in our meeting, we talked about, what do we do? Our nice areas, our nice furniture is starting to get ruined by all these people coming in. And ultimately, we had to come to recognize, why do we have these nice areas? Is it to keep them nice? Or is it so that they'd be used? Even if it means being used to capacity. That's why we had them. Okay, let them get ruined. That's why we have them, so that they're used. Sometimes the nets break. Sometimes the boat begins to sink. When you surrender yourself to the Lord. My wife and I just had our 10-year anniversary on Friday. It was sweet. We went down to a hotel in Denver, had the night together the next day, didn't check out till 12, which was awesome. We had some good conversations. We needed to talk because it's been hard. We've had a hard time. It's been a tiring number of years. There's been a lot of tears. There's been a lot of weariness. A lot of long nights. A lot of times without dad. A lot of times taking care of kids. It's been hard. You guys know. We had some conversation that needed to take place. Some of it was around, what are we doing wrong? Are there priorities that are out of place? And it was really good to process through, especially for myself, some areas that I was not holding what I needed to hold as a priority. But as we processed through, one of the main things that we came to, that we both understood and knew, is that life can be hard. And sometimes the nets break. And sometimes the boats begin to sink. Because we've offered ourselves to the Lord, who uses us sometimes to capacity. And as hard as it is, it's what we've chosen. And we believe it's what God's called us to. It's a hard pill to swallow. Because you want it to be great. You want life to be easy. But it's not always the case. Peter and his friends had surrendered their boat, had surrendered their nets. The nets were now breaking. The boats were now sinking. But they had an incredible catch. And they started bringing them back to shore. And that could be the end of the story. But I think Jesus had something else in mind with what was going on here, something more personal to Simon Peter. Because you see, as this is all happening, Simon Peter is starting to internalize it. He's starting to see what's going on. He's starting to see Jesus in maybe a totally new light that he hadn't seen before. And he's starting to see himself in a new way. And he's beginning to recognize his own sinfulness. And I can just imagine him thinking through, if this man, if this rabbi, who just brought in all these fish, knew who I really was, he wouldn't want to be with me. No, he couldn't be with me because I am such a sinful, wicked person. And again, Peter has a choice. Do I let him know who I am, or do I play it cool? Do I abandon myself, abandon all my self-righteousness, my facade that I have in front of this great rabbi? Or do I just hang back and act like everything's okay? Hard choice. Because you see, when you're in that place where you have to confess yourself, your sin, your error to others, you're putting yourself in such a place of vulnerability. You've been there, haven't you? When you know there's something wrong, you know you've wronged somebody or you've made a mistake, you've sinned. And you know that if you share that with somebody else, then you are fair game for them to do whatever they want to treat you maybe in the way you deserve. It's a hard place to be. I find myself there many times. Sadly, many times when I find myself in that place where it's whether I abandon myself or whether I preserve myself, the desire to preserve myself and my image wins out over my desire to be vulnerable and confess. And you know what happens? I preserve myself. I preserve my sinful, wicked, weak self. And life goes on. But I miss out on an opportunity. I love this passage in John chapter 12. John 12 verse 24, it says, unless a grain of wheat falls to the ground and dies, unless a grain of wheat falls to the ground and abandons itself, surrenders itself, breaks apart, unless it does that, it remains. It perseveres as a single seed. But if it dies, if it abandons itself, if it surrenders, it produces many seeds, much fruit. So often I've sacrificed the much fruit for self-preservation. I believe that's where Peter is. What do I do? Look at this man. Look at this rabbi. Look what he's done. What do I say? Thankfully, Peter chose to abandon. Verse 8, but when Simon Peter saw what had happened, when he saw this, he fell down at Jesus' feet saying, go away from me, Lord. He actually uses a command. Go away from me, for I am a sinful man. Now, it's interesting because we know the end of the story. We know Peter becomes a disciple. But again, you have to think about it through Peter's mind. Peter doesn't know the end of the story. I can only imagine that Peter thinks, this is it. This is it. Jesus has been in my house. He's healed my mom. I've been able to see him do miracles. Now he's in my boat. He's brought this great catch in. But I can't live a lie. And this is it. Get away from me, Lord. That's going to be the end of our relationship. Because I want to tell you, I am a sinful man. And I don't deserve to have you in my boat. Peter didn't know how Jesus would respond. How does Jesus respond? Well, the same way he did with an abandoned boat and an abandoned net, an abandoned task, an abandoned intellect. He says, good, I'm going to use you. He responds. Peter says, go away from me, Lord, for I am a sinful man, O Lord. For amazement had seized him and all his companions because of the catch of fish which they had taken. And so also were James and John, sons of Zebedee, who were partners with Simon. And Jesus said to Simon, do not fear. Don't be afraid. From now on, you'll be catching men. You've allowed that grain of wheat to fall to the ground and died. You surrendered yourself in complete need and recognition of your sin. Good, that's what I'm looking for, because God uses abandoned vessels, surrendered hearts. And he said, you will become a fisher of men. Fisher of men. Again, a little side note, but I think a significant one. As I was reading through this, I started wondering, why did it take Peter so long? I mean, why did it take Simon so long to come to this place of falling at Jesus' feet and surrendering himself to him, recognizing his sin? I mean, Peter has heard Jesus preach already in power. He was probably in the synagogue, most likely, when Jesus cast out the demon. He's had Jesus in his house, healed his own mother-in-law. And I can't imagine he didn't watch as Jesus healed person after person who came to the door and cast out demon after demon. Why did it take Peter so long to come to this place? Now, I don't know. I can't say this with authority. But I think sometimes we can relegate God and his power to the spiritual realm, to the church. And we can talk, and it's all wonderful, and it's true, and it's good, but we can talk to an unbelieving world about how he'll save you from your sins, and you get to go to heaven instead of hell, and he'll give you peace eternally. Wonderful things, things we all need. But they don't practically hit people in their heart often, because that's all stuff down the road. You see, Simon Peter had watched Jesus do miracles, and I can't imagine he didn't think, wow, God is using this man. As far as we could tell, Simon Peter didn't yet understand fully who Jesus was. That comes later in Luke. Peter had seen him, recognized how great he was, but it wasn't until Jesus engaged Peter miraculously in the workplace, in his place of experience, that Peter saw it and was shaken to the ground. And again, I have to ask myself, and I think we need to ask ourselves, do we focus so much on people coming to church, on people recognizing that Jesus saves into heaven? Again, those are wonderful. Those need to be what we communicate. But do we miss out because we don't invite Jesus into our daily life, into the workplace? Do we not recognize that the risen Lord Jesus has power with budgets and finances, 2x4s and trusses, groceries and diapers? Because maybe that's the place where those who we've built relationships with will actually see Jesus for who he is. Peter is stunned. Having seen miracles and demons casting out and hearing Jesus preach, when he sees with amazement the fish that are brought in, his place of experience, he falls at Jesus' knees. And I love this. The last verse, verse 11. In many ways, the culmination, the greatest abandonment or surrender of the whole passage, and yet I don't think we could have gotten to verse 11 if Peter hadn't surrendered his tasks first. And I don't think we could have gotten to him surrendering verse 11 if we hadn't gotten to him surrendering his experience and his skills. And I don't think we could have gotten to verse 11 if he hadn't surrendered himself. Because in verse 11, it says, when they had brought their boats to land, they'd brought all this fish to the shore, what did they do? They left everything. They abandoned it all. They surrendered it all and followed him. Interesting thing is, we don't really know what the all is. There's debate. Was it the fish? Is it that they left the fish? Well, they would have made a lot of money. Was it that they left their boats? They leave their occupation? They leave their families? We don't know. They left all. There was an attitude that said, God, my life, Jesus, is yours. I abandon it. Use me. Even if to capacity. They left all. And they followed him. Now, there's a couple different ways you can say a verb in Greek. A number of different ways. One is that it's an ongoing action. Like they became followers of him. At that point, they began following him. And it's something that continues to happen. That's not the word he uses here. He uses a one-time action. they left all and they chose that instant to follow him. And then next time they chose to follow him. And the next instance they followed him. And over time, they looked back and they were followers. You see, that's how the Christian life works. Having given ourselves to the Lord, having been saved by his grace and his mercy, we daily, we hourly, sometimes minute by minute, have to choose, right now, I'm going to follow him. I'm going to surrender, abandon, be used to capacity, and follow him right now. And sometimes, 2 or 3 minutes later, we have to choose it again. Because you have the choice to remain a single seed. Especially when the nets start breaking and the boat starts sinking. There's a strong draw to pull it back. It was interesting, as I was studying this passage, I couldn't help but remember another passage. It reminded me of another passage. And I thought, there must be another time when something like this happens. And as I was kind of looking through, I recognized that there was. It's in John chapter 21. John chapter 21. And this is so fascinating because Luke chapter 5 is the very beginning of Simon Peter's kind of full-on discipleship with Jesus Christ. John chapter 21 is almost the very last thing that happens with Simon Peter and Jesus Christ before Jesus heads up to heaven. And so you've got these bookends that in many ways parallel each other. John chapter 21, verse 1. After these things, Jesus showed himself again to the disciples. Jesus has died. He's risen again. He's showing himself to his disciples. In this way, he showed himself. Simon Peter, Thomas called the twin, Nathanael of Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two others of his disciples were together. Simon Peter said to them, I am going fishing. They said to him, we are going with you also. They went out and immediately got into the boat, and that night they caught nothing. Familiar? Yeah. I don't think, and I don't know why they're doing this. I don't think they were like, hey, let's just take a little, you know, relaxing break and do, you know, cast some lines out in the water. Do a little relaxing fishing. Because at least from my experience, when you want to fish for relaxation, you don't fish all night. No, when you fish all night on the Sea of Galilee, you're fishing to get fish to sell. This isn't relaxation. This is business. And so Peter says, hey, I'm going to go back and I'm going to fish tonight. I don't think he was necessarily, I don't know, maybe he was going to go back to being a fisherman. He'd already seen that Jesus had risen from the dead, but maybe there was some confusion, maybe there was some fear about what was next. And so Peter and his friends fish all night, catch nothing. The last time they fished all night, they caught nothing. It's not good. It said, verse 4, but when the morning had now come, Jesus stood on the shore, yet the disciples did not know that it was Jesus. Then Jesus said to them, children, have you any food? They answered him, no. We've been fishing all night, haven't caught anything. And he said to them, cast the net on the right side of the boat, and you will find some. So they cast, and now they were not able to draw it in because of the multitude of fish. What a sweet parallel. Therefore, the disciple whom Jesus loved, probably John, said to Peter, it is the Lord. Now, when Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put on his outer garment, for he had removed it, and plunged into the sea. But the other disciples came in the little boat, for they were not far from land, but about 200 cubits, dragging the net with fish. Then as soon as they had come to the land, they saw a fire of coals there, and fish laid on it, and bread. Jesus said to them, bring some of the fish which you have just caught. Simon Peter went up and dragged the net to the land full of large fish, 153 fish. And although there were so many, the net was not broken. See, Jesus can do it. Sometimes the nets don't break. Sometimes they do. Jesus said to them, come and eat breakfast. Yet none of the disciples dared ask him, who are you? Knowing that it was the Lord. Jesus then came and took the bread and gave it to them, and likewise the fish. This is now the third time Jesus showed himself to his disciples after he was raised from the dead. And so we have this beautiful parallel. But it's not just a parallel in the similarity of the story. Jesus' point in the story, his point in the action, is also the same. Verse 15. So when they had eaten breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me more than these? What are the these? Again, we don't know. Is it the fish? Is it the occupation? Is it his friends? It doesn't tell us. But the hard attitude is, are you willing to surrender all for me? Do you love me more than these? And he said to him, Lord, you know that I love you. So Jesus said to him, feed my lambs. He said to him again a second time, Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me? And he said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. He said to him, tend my sheep. And he said to him the third time, Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me? Peter was grieved because he said to him the third time, do you love me? And he said to him, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. Jesus said to him, feed my sheep. Most assuredly, I say to you, when you were younger, you girded yourself and walked where you wished. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and another will gird you and carry you where you do not wish. You will, Peter, be used to capacity. The nets will break and the boats will sink. Verse 19, this he spoke, signifying by what death he would glorify God. And when he had spoken this, he said to him the same words as when he started following Jesus as a disciple. Follow me. Follow me. The amazing thing is Jesus doesn't call us to follow him into something that Jesus isn't familiar with. Jesus calls us to follow him in the life that Jesus chose. Because Philippians 2:5 says that Jesus, though in equal position with God, as God, didn't consider equality with God as something to be grasped. He had it. But he humbled himself, becoming a man, just like us. And he submitted himself. He surrendered himself. He abandoned himself to the point of death, even death on the cross. Why? So that little seed, broken, abandoned, surrendered, could bear much fruit. So that the nets could break and the boat could sink and many could find life. So our challenge, my challenge, have I surrendered? Do I surrender? Task, intellect, experience, my soul, my heart, my self-righteousness, my everything. I don't know about you. For some of you guys, coming to service is that act of surrendering your agenda, your task. Yes, I will come to church. That's great. That's where it starts for Peter. He surrenders his task. He says, God, you can use my boat. Jesus, you can use my boat. That may be where you are. You could say, Lord, I surrender my task. I will give you Sunday mornings. But then I'm going to do my thing. Again, that's the beginning. That's surrender. And I believe Jesus says, okay, I'll use that. Maybe you have surrendered not just your task, but also your intellect, your experience, your outlook on life, what you've seen, what you've heard, what you've learned, what you've studied. And you said, God, what you say in the Word, what it says about Jesus doesn't fit in with what everybody tells me. But you've come to the place that Peter had to come to say, not only will I surrender my tasks, but I'm going to surrender my experience, my intellect. It's called faith. I'm going to trust. That's great. When that happens, Jesus says, great, I'll use you. But Peter went beyond that. And maybe you've come to the place where not only have you surrendered your task, your time, your agenda, you've surrendered your intellect, your understanding, and saying, God, you must be bigger than my understanding. And you've gone even beyond that to surrender your heart, your self-righteousness. And in humility and vulnerability, you've said, God, I need you. I cannot do life without you. I am broken. And I will live a life that's open with people so that I can be used to impact their lives. Maybe that's where you are. Wonderful. Jesus says, great, I can use that to capacity. Maybe you've been to the place where you said, Lord, you can have it all. I give you it all. I surrender all to follow you daily. Maybe, like me, I need to be reminded of what it means to surrender all. That sometimes the nets break and the boats sink and it's hard. But unless you surrender all, unless the grain of wheat falls to the ground and dies, it remains single seed. Yet if it dies, wow, God produces an incredible harvest. We're going to sing that song again that we sang at the beginning about surrendering all. And I encourage you not necessarily to sing along. You're welcome to. But I encourage you to process through the words. To ask the Lord, Lord, where do you need me to surrender the next level? I don't think he like barges in and says, if you don't give me everything, I'm not taking anything. He didn't do that with Peter. Sometimes it's those minute steps of surrendering. And he says, thank you, I'll use that. But I'm going to keep pushing. And so I encourage you as you hear these words to ask the Lord, Lord, what's the next place? Where do I surrender some more? How do I get back to that place of surrendering all? Lord, is there a place in my workplace where I can allow you to be God in the everyday life of those around me? Listen to the words. Read the words. Sing the words if you want. Pray the words. Ask the Lord to help you surrender all.